Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford, and I'll be taking your calls and answering your questions for the next hour or so. Lisa is here with us, screening calls and keeping things light and fun. If you want to join in, simply press 1 on your phone, and Lisa will be right with you. This is the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket. Sit back, relax, and listen, or jump in and ask your question. You can even bring us your opinion. It's up to you. This is your show. You can ask questions about fuel mileage, tires, engine, EGR, aerodynamics, truck specking, maintenance, taxes, financial planning, getting started as an owner-operator, or anything else about the business of trucking. Here we go. Let's head on down the audio road.
Hi, this is Lisa. Remember to talk to Kevin. Press 1 so I can pick up the phone and screen your call. You know you'd rather talk to me anyway. Or just sit back, relax, and listen to the show. And at any time you have a question, just hit 1 and I'll pick up the phone.
Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. Lisa's here screening your calls. I'm going to do a quick roundup of what's going on with rates and volume and things like that, and then we're going to get to your questions. We're going to do a recorded hour tonight, so it's your chance to get in with questions, comments, topics, whatever it might be. The number to join us, 347-884-8327. We'll get you live on the call. Once you're on that call, press 1 on your phone. Lisa will screen your call. Calls are a little light tonight. Questions are very light so far, so this may be your chance to get in with a question, a comment, a topic, whatever it might be. And again, we're going to get to that recorded hour in just a couple minutes, so get your questions lined up now, and we'll get to those. Press 1 on the phone once you're on the call. Lisa will get to you. That number again to join us if you're listening online. Pick up the phone and dial 347-884-8327. Once you're on that, press 1, and we'll line up those questions, comments, topics, whatever it might be that you've got. Let's take a look at the load boards, see what's going on the spot market load index. The load index for the week of October 31st through November 6th, spot market load index was just about flat. It was up 0.2%. Truck index was down 2.1%, so that gives us an overall net gain of about 2.3%. Actually, not bad for this week. If we look at the individual load-to-truck ratios for the week, the dry van load-to-truck ratio is up 5.6%. For the month, it's down 12%. For the year, it's up 52%. Flatbed load-to-truck ratio for the week is down 5%. For the month, down 3.7%. For the year, up 199%. The reefer load-to-truck ratio for the week is up 9.3%. For the month is down 15%. For the year, up 128%. So the load board's not looking too bad. Now there is a there's another indicator out that doesn't really tell us what's going on in the trucking industry, but it uses the trucking industry to tell us what's going on in the economy. It's a really interesting number that comes out now once a month. And I've said many times that trucking in general, that when we see numbers in trucking, that's what's called a leading economic indicator. When the economists and the analysts look to see what might be coming in the economy, they look at what are called leading economic indicators, and trucking is one of them. There's a whole bunch. But a lot of times, by the time the numbers come in from the industry, we're already seeing what's happening in the economy.
Well, there's a group that worked together with UCLA and some other sources of data and put together a way to see what's going on in the trucking industry early. And it's actually fairly simple. What they're looking at is how many gallons of fuel are purchased in a given week, and they track that number. And the idea is the more fuel purchased, the more freight being delivered, the more miles being driven, and then they use that to show what the trucking industry is doing early, and then they predict what the economy is going to do based on that number. The number came out today, and unfortunately, it's really not looking good for the economy. This has been a pretty good year compared to, you know, 2009 and the latter part of 2008. But this number, this index that I'm talking about, went down this month. And that's not a big deal. Sometimes it goes up, sometimes it goes down. But this is the first time since 2009 that it has gone down 3 months in a row. So they're saying just not a good indicator for the economy in general. So we'll keep an eye on that. They're kind of using it to predict a slow holiday season. And the holiday season has a big impact on what's going on in the economy itself. So we'll keep an eye on that and the other indexes as well. If you're listening to us online and you want to join us, the number to dial 347-884-8327. Once you're on that, you can press 1 on your phone and we'll get to your questions. We are going to do a recorded hour. So now is your chance. If you've always had a hard time getting through, if you've got a question, a comment, a topic you want to talk about, the lines are just about wide open tonight. In fact, what we're going to do is we are only going to record for as long as we have questions. And right now, it's not looking like we have that many questions. So jump in, and now may be the time. Much easier to get through. Let's go ahead and get started with the recording. Again, if you want to jump in, press 1 on your phone. Lisa will screen your call, and we'll get to that. Let's go ahead and get started on the recording. Good evening and welcome to the show. I'm Kevin Rutherford and this is the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket. I'm here tonight and every night to improve your bottom line and make you more successful. We talk about the things that are important to you, your business, your money, your life, and your success. Thanks for joining me, allowing me to ride along with you for an hour tonight. I consider it my mission on this show to bring you the very latest information to help you be more successful, make more money, save more money, and avoid scams and ripoffs. We can talk about trucks, money, retirement accounts, fuel mileage, maintenance, health insurance, technology, taxes, financial planning, current events, politics, or anything else you'd like to bring to the show. The website is letstruck.com. The important stuff, well, that's your phone call, so we're going to get right to them tonight. Let's jump in and start off the show in, let's go to Matt. Matt, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Kevin. How are you doing tonight?
Doing good. What can I help you with?
I'm just calling to let you give you some feedback. I put the Fleet air filter in my truck, and I installed the Pittsburgh power muffler, and I also had the OPS installed as well. I have all thumbs up on all the products. I mean, as far as the engine running, the turbo has a different pitch to it. It just it flows better. And as far as the synthetic oil and everything, it starts up so much better in the colder weather. We've had some colder weather lately and things like that.
Excellent.
I think I think I picked up about 2.5, maybe 0.3 between all of those things I installed.
Okay, how long have they been on?
Less than 30 days, probably maybe like two weeks, solid 2 weeks.
Okay. Excellent. Yeah, that's a nice combination. You've really, the engine is running much freer. When all of those things combined, you're getting better airflow in, better airflow out, the engine's moving through a lighter, thinner oil, better protected from dirt with the filter, better protected from everything with the OPS on there. So I'm glad to get the feedback. I think you're going to be very happy with those.
Right. And I'm running the mobile full synthetic. You said you had some problem with that oil?
Well, you know what? It was very, very early on when I tried it. And what I mean by early on was it was one of the first synthetic oils developed that was rated for heavy truck engines. This was in the mid-90s.
Oh, wow.
When
that's
I tried it. Yeah. I think I went back to it one time somewhere around 2000, and the results still were, a couple things were fixed. One of the big problems in the very beginning with it was they weren't putting what are called seal swellers in the synthetic oil. And that's one of the things that helps any of the seals in the engine kind of swell, and that stops leaks. And they didn't put that in the early synthetic oil. And I had a bunch of leaks when I first put it in. It was really annoying. And one of the engines I was using it in really started to burn a lot more oil. So I haven't got back to it in all the testing I've done. It was just early results that I didn't have a good time with.
Okay, yeah. I'm driving one of those bargain trucks, like one of those $15,000 trucks.
There you
and
go.
I picked it up and had, you know, I had to rebuild the engine and all that stuff, and I've kind of worked it and passed it along, and you know, and I'm working pretty good at it. And I just I don't see a reason for going out and buying a new truck, you know. But I keep drooling over those glider kits over there at Fitzgerald. So,
well, you know that's the when you get to the point where a new truck makes sense, and it doesn't for everybody. That's why you hear me so many times. It's why in my own operation, I'm still running a 99. An 01 and an 05, because new trucks don't always make sense. When we have a truck and we either paid a small amount of money for it or it's paid off, you know what? If it's running down the road, it's making just as much money as a new truck can.
Well,
so it's not for everybody. But when you're in that position, and at some point it is time to replace trucks, or at some point in an operation, it's time to get new and you've got the budget, the glider kit really makes sense then. But it does make sense for everybody.
Well, I want quick, and I'll let the next one get in here. When does that make sense to you know, as far as the budget and the operation? Is it when you get into the right operation, or, I mean?
You know, there are several factors you have to look at. A lot of it is personal preference. There are some people who would just rather buy the $15,000 truck, make it efficient, kind of what you're doing, putting some of the aftermarket products on it, and then just running it till they wear it out, buy another one. You could go an entire career as an owner-operator like that. Some people get to a point and they say, look, you know what, I'm making money, I've got money in the bank, I really would like a new truck. And if I'm going to buy a new truck, then the glider kit makes so much sense because, you know, the cost and the emissions and maintenance and fuel mileage and all the other advantages. But there almost never comes a time, really, when we can make more money with that new one. I mean, if we can just keep buying good, solid, use trucks and making them efficient and taking care of them, they'll almost always put more money to the bottom line. So it really kind of becomes a personal preference when you just want a new one.
I see. I appreciate that. Thank you.
You're welcome. And the other time, or in the other situation, or fleets, you know, a lot of times it makes a lot of sense for a fleet to buy new trucks to put them on a cycle of replacement and 4, 5, 6 years, whatever it might be, then buy new. And that has to do with cash flow and drivers and some other factors like that. But it's hard to argue against buying a good, solid used truck, especially when there are bargains like there are now. That's another factor we could probably talk about and throw into the mix, is that buying a new truck may be very dependent on what the used truck market is doing. When the used truck market gets really, really tight and there aren't a lot of used trucks available and that drives the price of them up, then a new truck starts to look a little more attractive. But we've been in this cycle for several years now where there are a lot of really cheap trucks. And as long as they're available, then I'm going to be all over them. Now, that may change. There was a time when used truck prices weren't so good. The other factor that we always have to throw in is if you're with a carrier that has a 5-year rule, I've talked about that many times and how I feel about that. If we were to look at, we're coming up on 2011, meaning if we're at a carrier, and I'm at one, that has a 5-year rule, the oldest truck I could possibly buy is a 2006. Well, we know we've got emissions on that. So I may, rather than spend $60,000 on a 2006, I may do everything I can to come up with the budget to buy a new glider kit instead. And that may get even more important a year from now when we start looking at the fact that we're going to have to buy 2007s and we're looking at the DPF. So this kind of strategy changes, and we need to take a look at everything that's going on in the market, in the economy, in our own budget. But if we're able to buy one of those good used trucks, and even if we have to put a lot of money into it, it's certainly hard to go wrong with that. As long as our carrier will accept it, we know how to buy the truck, all of those kind of things. The same thing we're doing with the Signature B project right now, which is buy that old truck, have a budget of, we're shooting for $60,000 to put back into that old truck, kind of make it as good or as close to new as we can get it, and also make it very fuel efficient at the same time and keep maintenance costs down. And we're going to do that by getting all of those aftermarket products on the truck while we're doing the reconditioning. So we're going to try to make it like new. We're also going to try to make it very fuel efficient, very low cost for maintenance, and see how much money it takes us to do that. And we're right in the middle of that. We're hoping to have that truck done before the first of the year is kind of what we're shooting for. As always, with a bunch of projects running at the same time, we're a little behind schedule, but we're not doing too bad. I've got to get to a break. We've got more coming. Stick around. You're on the Road Dog, Sirius 147, XM 171. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We'll be right back. All right, that's the first segment of the recording down, and we've got more coming. And I'll tell you, calls are really light tonight. I've only got a couple more questions to get to. So if you're listening right now online and you want to join us, 347-884-8327. And if you're on that call, go ahead and press 1 on your phone now. Lisa will get to you if you've got a question, a comment, a topic, whatever it might be. and we'll get to those. If we do run out of questions, we're just going to call it a night. So it's up to you. Press 1 on your phone, and we'll get to those here. We're going to start on the second segment of the recording right now. Good evening. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Trucking Business and Beyond. The number to join us, 8888 Road Dog. The website is letstruck.com. And I'm going to get right back to the phone calls. Let's go to Wyoming. Michael, welcome to the program.
Well, good evening. How are you doing, Kevin?
Doing great. What's on your mind tonight?
Oh, I wanted to give you an update on my Evans cooling change that I did.
Yeah, what's going on with that?
I've been having some issues, and I'm working with Evans on it. If I'm pulling a hill, I did the whole conversion. I got the 215 thermostat resistor pack, and when I'm pulling a hill, and I load pretty heavy. You know, I got, you know, like this load tonight's pretty light. It's 84,000, and the one earlier was 120,000. So I load pretty heavy loads, and I run all these big hills in Wyoming we got, and the temperature will start climbing. Then the fan will come on at 2:30, and it'll just keep climbing. The buzzer will come on, and that's normally if I keep it at 1300 to 1350, where I like to cruise it. I just got plenty of power to pull the hill, and I have to drop a gear, maybe two gears, and give about 1500 RPMs to get it to cool down. And I've seen it get as high as 245. But Evan says that shouldn't hurt the engine because of the Evans coolant. So they sent me a new resistor pack. When I get home, I'm going to put it on. They're going to want to raise the temperature another 5 degrees. They're going to see if that's going to help it. But that's
so
the issues I'm having with it.
Okay, they're going to raise the fan on temperature another 5 degrees.
Yeah.
Is that what we're doing? Okay.
That's what we're going to try another 5 degrees to see if that'll solve the issues. And I have another problem. If I'm just cruising lightly, it's a real light hill, and the fan will pop on at 2:30, and it'll just stay on because it does. He thinks it's what they call it. The temperature's already cooled down. It's running over. Now I forgot the way they said it, but they worded it where the temperature, the thermostats have already closed, and it's bypassing. But the engine still thinks it needs to cool down so my fans stay on longer. Since I've done the conversion, I get more fan time. And it comes on and it stays on for longer periods of time. But still, my fuel mileage has gone up, even though I've been having more fan time.
Yeah, that's interesting. I haven't seen that happen, and I'm a little curious. I may call. I need to talk to them anyway about some other things. I'm going to make a note about this one. I'm wondering why they're going to go with a higher fan on temperature.
Well, here's what they told me. At first, they wanted me to go to a cooler thermostat again. They said, well, let's lower it down to 197. And I said, well, what's the purpose for the fuel mileage? He says, well, we could do one of two things. We could put a cooler thermostat in it. That way, because Cummins has had the same problem. I got a Cat motor, the C15 Cat 2001 model. And he hasn't had any cats have the same problem, but they've had Cummins, ISX has this problem. But he says, okay, well, we'll try something different because my thermostats are hard to replace, and you got to drain the cooling system. You got more working with. Well, we can try 5 degrees hotter if it will help it. Said, if that don't help, we'll probably got to go to the cooler thermostat, is what he was telling me. But now if I keep the RPMs up higher, you know, between 1450, 1500, like drop an extra gear, I don't have much of an issue, but then I'm going to use more fuel and keeping your RPMs up.
Well, you know what? We might not. And that's kind of what I was thinking as you were telling me this, is this is part of what we found, even though the engine manufacturers have been telling us for years now, low RPM, low RPM, low RPM, that's fine when we're cruising. They told us it'll pull. Let these engines pull right down to 12 or 13, and that's the torque curve, and it is. And we have the power, but they don't seem to get the fuel economy when we let them pull like that. The engines seem to do better when we hit those lower gears sooner. When we know we've got a long pull and a hard pull, we seem to do better, and this may be, even though you've got more fan on time, this may be why you're seeing better fuel economy. Partly the engine running hotter is more efficient, but it might be that you've been dropping those lower gears, try to keep that temperature down, and that's actually improving our fuel economy.
Right, and then, my next project, I'm going to do like Jimmy the Junk Man did. I'm going to go to the electric cooling fans. I got a buddy here in town that can get some really good racing fans, and we're going to talk about it probably on Friday. And I'm going to set something up where I'm going to put four racing fans in there and get rid of the big fan that it has right now.
Keep me informed when you do that. I'm interested in maybe putting together a package like that, you know, of a conversion to the Evans coolant for the efficiency and then the electric fans at the same time. It's one of those things I've been meaning to do and we just don't get around to, so I'd like to get some more feedback on that.
Right. I mean, my average, I've gained a good solid 0.3 with the fuel mileage increase, and that's pulling these heavy loads. My average, I used to run about 5.8 the way I drive, and now I'm averaging 6.2.
You know, that's a big increase when you're down in the fives. To get to 3 or 4 tenths is a much bigger savings than, you know, when we talk about some of these trucks that don't have to pull so hard, not so extreme. You know, if you're up at 7.5 and you pick up 4 tenths, that's not nearly as much as you picking up 4 tenths from 5.8. Your gain is much bigger down there. So keep me informed. I'd like to hear back on what happens with the Evans, because I don't have a lot of feedback in more extreme situations like you've got heavy loads and a lot of pull. So I'd like to hear what happens.
Oh, yeah, I'll let you know. And
excellent.
I had one more question.
Sure.
If you don't mind, it's on transmissions. I'm about ready. My transmission's giving out. That rear main bearing's giving out on it. I got an 18-speed double over. I got a C15 cat. I got 321 gears. And what I was thinking of doing to lower my speed so I can cruise 63 to 65. And right now I'm set up where I got to cruise in top gear, like 67, 68. And I want to slow it down. I was thinking of changing it out to a single over 13 speed. That would give me the 0.85, which would keep me at 64 in 13th gear. I was talking to Western Truck Parts about this the other day. And how do you feel about that? They're kind of pushing me off that they want me to go with the same transmission again because of warranty, because I got such a high torque engine versus how do you feel about that?
You know what I would really look at and talk to them about, and I had never driven one until I just recently I borrowed a truck that Bruce Mallinson built at Pittsburgh Power. He built it to pull a fifth wheel trailer years ago, and it was sitting there, and I borrowed it when we got our new mobile studio. And the more I drove that transmission, the more I really liked it. And in an operation like yours, I think it would be ideal. And that's an 18-speed single over.
I'm going to have to ask Western if they have that.
Yeah, see if they have one, or it's possible. I mean, they rebuild transmissions every day. It's possible that they can build one back to a single overdrive instead of a double overdrive. I really liked it. I mean, for me, I drive around, and we're fairly light in this operation, but I drive around at 57 or 58 miles an hour, so I never used 18. I was in direct all the time in 17th, which is really efficient, and then 18th is always there, you know, and this has 342s and a mechanical engine, so I needed to keep the RPMs up pretty high.
On that 18 speed, what was the final ratio on it? For the
final ratio is was 0.85.
0.852. Okay, I'll talk with them because they didn't want to do the 13 single over because they're the ones they got only rated for 1450 foot pounds of torque, and my engine runs 1850 foot pounds of torque. So they, I think, because of warranty, they didn't say because of warranty. They just kind of want to steer me away from it because of the, they don't think the transmission will last pulling the loads I pull and the amount of torque I use.
Yeah, talk to them and see if what they can do on an 18-speed single over. Like I say, I had never driven one before. They're not very common, but after driving one around, I really like that transmission a lot. And in your operation with those kind of weights and the part of the country you're running in, I think it would be ideal.
Well, maybe I can get them to rebuild mine and maybe convert it to a single over.
They might be able to. Certainly they're the people to talk to.
I'll talk with them about it. I appreciate that, Kevin. You have a good night.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. I've got to get to a break. We've got more stuff coming, so stick around. You're on the Road Dog Sirius 147 XM 171. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We'll be right back. Good evening. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Trucking Business and Beyond. The website is letstruck.com. We're going to jump right back into the phone calls. Let's go to Virginia this time. Chris, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. How are you doing this evening?
Doing great. What can I help you with?
I had a question about that that new way of testing the charger cooler with smoke.
Yeah.
What kind of equipment do you use to do that?
You know, we came across this by accident. We've been looking for a way to test the brake system and the air system on the truck to find leaks, because sometimes somebody will come in and they say, we've got a leak, you know, you let it sit overnight, you got to wait to build up pressure, and trying to track down some of those leaks can just take forever. You know, some of the airlines and some of the junctions are really tough to get to. And, you know, you try to use the soapy water method, and there are some other ways, but it's really time-consuming. So we bought this machine is designed to produce smoke. It's used to test exhaust systems and some other things in automotive work. And we couldn't get it to work on the brake system. We thought for sure. I mean, it just seemed like a no-brainer. Put some smoke in the system, wait to see where it comes out. And it wasn't working for us. So we called the manufacturer back, and we explained to them what they were doing, what we were trying to do, and they said, well, it won't work for an air brake system. And then they said they had tried for 3 years. They were working with PACCAR, I think it was, for 3 years to try to make a smoke machine that would work on an air brake system, and they couldn't do it. The problem is there are too many places in the air brake system where the air is forced through very small openings in the valves.
Right.
And when it has to go through that small opening, the air speeds up and the smoke particles drop out of the air. So it dissipates before it gets back into the system. So it just doesn't work. And we said, wow, you know, we bought this machine hoping it would. And they said, well, you know, if you're in the trucking industry, because they really make these on the automotive side, there is another test that you could use this for. They said, we've had some luck using it to test the charger cooler system. As soon as they said that, you know, the light bulbs kind of went off. Wow, what a great idea. So we immediately started testing them, and it's working great. There are different levels of smoke machines. The one we bought is about 1,500 for the machine itself. So it's, I don't know that it's really practical for a self-test. I don't know that anybody would want to spend that much. But for us in the shop, we're literally testing sometimes 2 and 3 charger coolers a day. And especially now that it's so easy to test them, we're making it a standard part of every service. We're right. not, you know, it's not intrusive. We're not going in and pulling off a bunch of clamps. So when a truck comes in for anything else, it's really simple. You pull the air filter element out, put a garbage bag over it, stick it back in. That creates a seal. There's just a quarter-inch fitting on the intake manifold, the ether port. We pull those out, screw our smoke machine in, and turn the machine on. I mean, that's really the entire test. We've got it up and running in a couple minutes, and it actually tests the entire system from intake manifold all the way over to air filter intake.
Right. Sounds ingenious.
it's one of those things that as soon as I saw it, I thought, why didn't we think of this sooner? I mean, it really makes a lot of sense. And the interesting thing is, even though we're not putting the smoke under any pressure, I mean, it's probably less than 5 pounds. It's a couple pounds of pressure. The machine doesn't produce much. Smoke is, if there is a leak anywhere, even though it's not under pressure, the smoke will find that leak. It's amazing to see it just drift out of a tiny leak in a hose clamp somewhere. Now, the one thing that it doesn't tell us that we're kind of used to is we can't quantify the leak. Whereas before, we tell people you pressurize it, you watch it for 15 seconds, and if we lose so much, we know that that's a leak that we need to replace the charger cooler. So here's kind of what we're doing. We put the smoke to it, it's going to show a leak anywhere. Well, if there's a leak in an intake manifold, you know, we're going to fix it because you just don't want any leak at the intake manifold. If there's a leak in a clamp, it's easy to fix. You know, either tighten the clamp up or a couple times we've had to pull the hose off, clean up the connection, put it back together, check it again. So we find a lot of those. Now, if we were to find a leak in a charger cooler itself, in the core, then what we would do is go back and do the traditional pressurized test to see how bad that leak was.
Right, okay. And the reason why I asked is, you know, what kind of equipment is because, I mean, I'm a single truck owner operator, and just curious, I mean, can you use a regular smoke machine for special effects?
You know, you could certainly try it. Anything that would produce smoke and get it into that system seems to me like it would work. Now, the special effects machines use dry ice, don't they?
It's some kind of a fluid that produces the smoke. I mean, but I've seen them on eBay for, I mean, less than $100.
You know, that'd be interesting. If it were less than $100, I'd certainly give it a try. I don't see.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah, that might be, you know, you might be on to something. You know, we spent $1,500. Ours uses oil. It's an oil solution that you pour in, and it kind of heats up the oil to produce the smoke. But something else, you know, a special effects machine, if it makes enough smoke, that might work.
I'll have to look into that for sure. Let you know what happens.
Yeah, absolutely. If you get something and it works, let me know.
All right, and one more question.
Okay, go ahead.
And this is about a vibration that I'm having in my tractor. I'm trying to figure out because it's not there when I'm loaded, I pull fuel, gasoline, and when I'm loaded, doing 60 miles an hour, barely notice it, but when I'm empty doing 60 miles an hour, you know, it's shaking almost everything. My dashboard, if I put my hands on it, it quiets the, you know, the rattling noise. Now,
yeah. Okay.
trying to figure out at what point would I determine this, you know, is it a driveline thing or, you know, a wheel?
A steady vibration at 60 miles an hour and one that gets worse when we're empty is balance. So it's more than likely going to be in a wheel assembly. It could be driveline, but I would look at wheel assemblies first. Have you had any tire work done lately?
No, and my tires are wearing perfectly fine in the front and in the rear. I'm not having any tires.
Can you tell if this is coming from the front or the back?
I can feel it in my, like I got my foot, you know, rested right at the clutch, and I can feel it in the clutch. I mean, pretty much all throughout my seat.
Okay. It's probably a rear tire assembly. Do you have any balancers on the back?
No, but I was definitely looking into that. So, I mean, if it's something that I wanted to put on, it would be balanced.
Here's what I would like to do, and here's what I found works. When we get a problem like this, let's just attack it all at once and figure it out. I'm 95% sure this is going to be an out-of-balance condition in the rear drive wheel somewhere. I would put on the true balance centering sleeves first. Actually, I would just do it all at once if I could afford to. The true balance centering sleeves, the Balance Master wheel balancers, and if I hadn't had shocks in a while, I would put on shocks. And more than likely, that's going to take care of it.
Okay. All right, I'll definitely look into that first. Balancers and True Balance product. What about those drive shaft balancers? Do you have any experience with those?
Yeah, you know, when we build the Signature truck, we balance everything, front end, drive line, and rear end, and engine also with the crankshaft damper and balancer. And I'll tell you, when you've got everything balanced like that, you would be absolutely amazed. It's the smoothest truck I've ever driven.
Okay. Now it's a matter of where to start. To do the wheels, I would do the wheels.
I would start with the rear wheel assemblies first in your case, because I think that's where the problem is. If you could afford the driveline balancers at the same time, go ahead and throw them on, because it will certainly help as well. But if you have to pick and choose, I think I would do the centering sleeves first from True Balance, and then the Balance Masters, and then shocks, and then driveline balancers if I had to do it in a certain order. Stick around. We'll be right back. You're on the Road Dog, Sirius 147, XM 171. I'm Kevin Rutherford.
Do you have irregular tire wear and vibration? Need to get more miles out of your tires and your fuel tank? You need True Balance wheel centering products. These patented products center the wheels back to the wheel stud. The result is increased tire life, increased fuel mileage, and the smoothest ride possible, period. Go to the website, www.trutru-bal.com, and see what True Balance has done for other drivers just like you. If you drive a truck, True Balance is a must. Call us today at 866-686-9285 and get your center on.
Good evening. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Trucking Business and Beyond. Let's get right back to the phone calls. Let's go to George in Missouri. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, Kevin. Appreciate you.
What can I help you with tonight?
Some type of app for road taxes?
You're breaking up just a little bit, but I did hear an app for road taxes. Are we talking about fuel tax? Uh-oh. Are you there? I think I'm going to lose you. I'm going to... Okay. Oh, wait a minute. You might be coming back.
Not you to do it all. Money.
You there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Go ahead and try the question one more time.
Oh, for fuel tax, road tax purposes, reporting.
Okay. Are you looking for software or an app?
Probably software where I don't need the internet, you know, to get Wi-Fi or something.
Okay, so you have to file your own IFTA reports. Is that what we're doing?
Yes.
Okay. And I'll tell you what my favorite is, but it does require the internet. There is a version of it that doesn't. It's a little more expensive up front. Your option is on the internet version, either pay by the month, or the non-internet version, you pay more up front because you're buying the software. I'll give you what I would use in this situation because it has multiple benefits. I mean, there are a couple products out there that would just do our fuel tax, but I like things that do more than one. And I've talked a lot about fuel optimization. Do you know what that is?
No, not really. No.
Okay. Here's what fuel optimization does. Buying fuel, there's a big opportunity for savings when we buy fuel. But in order to do it right, we have to understand fuel tax. So I teach people, and it takes me literally about an hour to an hour and a half when I'm in front of a group to get everybody in the group to understand fuel tax. And the couple times I've tried to do it on the radio, I just don't think it comes off all that well because it helps if I have the numbers in front of you to show you. But if we don't understand fuel tax, we can use this system. It does all the work for us. I'd like to teach people about it, then show them the system. But what this does is it finds us the very best fuel price all the time along our route, and it takes fuel tax into consideration. You know, the example I always use is Florida and Georgia. And even though Florida's fuel looks more expensive, once we understand fuel tax, we know it's not. It's actually cheaper than Georgia. Now, fuel optimization, what it would do is if I'm running from Cleveland to Dallas, I put that into the system. Cleveland's my starting point. Dallas is my destination. The software goes out and checks every fuel price along the route, figures out fuel tax in every state, tells me exactly where to buy my fuel to get the very best price. Now, on average, most owner-operators can save about $1,500 to $2,000 a year by using fuel optimization. Now, along with the system, you also get really good fuel tax reporting, and it's simple. I mean, you don't do anything except spit out the report at the end of the quarter. The system that I use is ProMiles. You can go to ProMiles online at ProMiles.com, or you can buy their software on the disk. But again, to check real-time fuel prices, even if you're on the disk, you need internet access to get on to check prices. So I would... It sounds to me like maybe you don't have a lot of internet access on the road. It's worth paying for. If you use it for nothing but fuel optimization, it would pay for itself. Let's go to Arkansas. Dave, welcome to the program.
Hello, Kevin.
Hey there.
Hey, I'm
earlier this fall I called you. I'm one of them guys that had one of them cat motors that was puffing white smoke when you started it up when it was cold.
Yes. Yep,
and
I remember.
I did bring it into the shop, and they tore it apart. It was the head gasket, and the head was cracked.
Ooh, both,
but anyway,
huh? Okay.
Yeah. But anyway,
hey, just out of curiosity, what did that cost you?
$4,500.
You know, that's not horrible. I mean, I know it is when you're the one that has to write the check, but...
Cat wanted $5,000 just to replace the head gasket, so...
Yeah, see, that's kind of what...
I took it to a little shop that I used to get my work done at. They said they changed the head gasket for $2,000, and then when they pulled it apart, it cost me $2,500 for a three-man head.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, once you're at that point, the only additional cost is the part itself, because we've already got it all off.
Right, right. But anyway,
okay.
I think you always commented in the past that oil is oil and diesel fuel is diesel fuel. But this little shop where I get my oil changed, they're not a truck shop. They're more of a farm equipment shop that's just right next door to me. And they have U.S. oil, which I'm not real familiar with, but I think that's an old name. I mean, I think they've been in business for a long time, U.S. oil.
Okay.
And I was going through 3 to 5 gallons in between oil changes, 15,000-mile oil changes. And it was a cheaper oil, so I got... Smart or whatever you want to say, and I changed oil, which I am an old farm boy, so I went to a John Deere oil, and after I switched from that U.S. oil to this newer, more expensive oil, I'm back down to 1 gallon per oil change.
You know, interesting. Now, you said this is John Deere oil?
Yep.
Okay. I wonder... My guess is that John Deere isn't making that oil, that they're having somebody make it for them and then they're putting their brand on it. I wonder who's making it.
Yeah, I looked on Barrel, and there's nothing that says any name or nothing like that, but I'm sure you're right.
You know, we could actually figure it out, and the way we figure it out is we send a new sample of that oil to our lab. And
okay.
the lab can match it, because each oil kind of has a signature. You know, when you test the oil, you can see that it has this many parts of this additive and this many parts of that additive, and it's this viscosity and this TBN, and we can usually match it up to something that's in the system and find out who makes it. It might be interesting to know. What is this, a 1540?
Yes. They both were 1540s.
Okay.
U.S. and John Deere.
Okay. Yeah, it's interesting. I was almost thinking that maybe you went to a heavier oil and that's what stopped the oil consumption, but it's the same weight.
Maybe that U.S. oil, like you were talking to that earlier caller, didn't have them seal swellers in?
Possibly. I mean, I guess that could happen. I've always kind of struggled with this issue. Is one oil better than another? I certainly know that oils are different. They use different additive packages. My struggle has been, how do I quantify which one is better? I'd love to find an oil that really stood out for me that I could say, hey, look, this is really the best oil I've found. I just haven't found it yet. I haven't found a way to quantify it. Now, in your case, you certainly did. I mean, you found something that absolutely made sense, and you could see the difference.
But does it, I mean, I don't have the prices in front of me to tell you how much more this John Deere oil costs, but really it didn't mean nothing if I was going through that amount of oil, correct?
Well, exactly. I mean... You could spend as much as 3 times more on the John Deere oil, and you probably break even, and you don't have to screw around with as much oil.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, certainly sounds to me like you're on the right track with this one. Lisa just sent me over some of the specs on this oil. I'll take a look at it, and maybe we can even figure out who makes this. Because my guess is, I'm pretty sure it's not John Deere actually producing the oil. They've got somebody producing it for them, and then they're putting their brand on it. So I'll do some digging and see if I can find out where it's coming from. I want to thank everybody for joining me. Stick around. Jonesy's coming up next with the all-night truck stop. You're on the road, dog. Sirius 147, XM 171. Remember, be safe, be profitable, be responsible, and master the journey. Good night, everyone. I'm Kevin Rutherford.